I am Amir Wilkins, and this is...
I'm Amir's pop-pop, Timothy Carroll.
How was it like being a black male growing up with your mom not having a lot of funds?
Well, it was... Well, as a child, you know, we really didn't realize as much that we were a little unfortunate with money. Because we lived in a house. My father worked. My mom was pretty much a stay-at-home mom at the time until we all got old enough to be kind of like on our own. Then she went to work. But for the most part, having four brothers and a sister coming up and having to share just about everything, you know. I remember my mom buying just the essentials, underwear, socks, and those things, and having to share, you know, the three packs, the six packs of socks, the three packs of underwear, and she would buy enough so that each of us would have like two or three pairs, and we would have to, that's what we got. And the only time we really got things were like Easter, Christmas, maybe during the holidays. We not getting the sneakers and all those things. We didn't get, you know, the top brands. Back then, there were only two or three, you know, major brands, and they were all made of canvas. There was no such thing as leather sneakers. So there was a time when all we could afford was Bobos, and that's what we wore. We wore the Bobos. And, you know, the sneakers came in boxes, and they came in big bins where you had to dig through and find your size. Those were the ones that, you couldn't afford the Converses or the John Smiths. We had to wear the ones out of the bin. And at that time, my mom was, if she didn't have the money, it was either this or nothing. So you have to take what you can get. Cry a little bit, put it on, and you walk. Kids make fun of you, and you deal with it. But you moved on with your life.
And who's the president at this time?
I don't remember. Kennedy, I believe. Okay. When I was growing up, I remember Kennedy. I remember when he was assassinated. I remember Martin Luther King and his assassination. We were at school, and they sent us home. Mm. You know, I remember my mom crying after his assassination, being sent home from school. Martin Luther King was assassinated, and they shut the schools down and sent everybody home.
Did this stop you from doing something you really wanted to do?
No, at that time I was still like in elementary, so I was just a kid, just a child coming, trying to make it through elementary and get to junior high.
Right.
You know.
What was elementary school you went to?
I went to Emlyn Elementary in Philadelphia, chewing up. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think, out of all this stuff that happened to you as a black male, did it make you a better person?
Well, a better person, it make me a more aware of my surroundings, and having to be able to navigate through not really knowing what prejudice was, but back then it was being, you know, navigating through the prejudice, not being able to leave your neighborhood, because at that time, the more affluent neighborhoods were not far away from 2 and Washington Lane, where I grew up, and just up the street, up the hill at Artley and in Washington Lane was where some of the Jewish people lived, and walking around that neighborhood was a bit of a challenge because, you know, black people didn't live in that area.
Right.
So just going up there and being up in that neighborhood, sometimes you get chased out of there. So But they had all the nice houses. They had, I mean, that our house was nice too. Our neighborhoods was nice. There was still, you know, it was still when I moved on the block, on my block, there were still white people who lived on the block. Mm. And they were beginning to move out, and black people were beginning to move in more. But they used to, you know, there's a lot of Italians that lived on my block. Mm. A lot of Italians. So I remember them playing bocce ball at the end of the block. So, and the on Sundays or Saturdays, the street would be full. They'd be at the end of the block playing bocce ball, horseshoes.
Do you think being black back then as a male was different than it is now?
Well, there's some things that are, that I guess were different. It was, so, I mean, the prejudice is still there. It was a little more harsh back then. It's, for black males. The, you know, Rizzo was the police commissioner and the mayor, and his idea of law and order was controlling the African American community and doing some things to African Americans that were borderline or cruel and unusual punishment. Yeah, it wasn't a easy time for black people, and you know, doing that there, like white people were just as vocal about telling you to get away and not to be in their area, and a lot more more liberal about it than they are now. Yeah.
Okay. Would you say it's a little easier now?
I mean, the freedoms are a little bit more, things are a little bit more lax, but the institutional style of racism exists more now than back then when it was up front and in your face.
Right.
As a child, you know, the restrictions were restricted. Now it's like you're free. You're able to navigate your environment, but then when you want to engage in a particular thing or job or whatever, then the institution institutional and policy racism steps into place. Where, I mean, they were there back then, but now it's more like it's always like everybody uses it against you.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you have any white friends?
I grew up on in my neighborhood at the time. We had white neighbors, so I mean, we played with them, but they were still their parents, you know, were a little bit apprehensive about us associating with them for the most part. But we did. They played. We had fun.
Did the incident ever...
But they moved at the time as they were able to afford it. They left.
Mm. Was it like a good diverse number of black and whites on the block, or they were like the only family?
Well, it was like this. being, when I moved on to my neighborhood, I think I was around 3 years old. So I remember vaguely that the street was mostly white when I first moved on it.
Mm.
And then as time went on, there was scattered, and then at the beginning of the block, there was one white family who stayed, who was there for quite a while as we were growing up. And at the end of the block, there was one white family who was there for a great deal of my growing up. And then after that, they pretty much left, or after they got older, the kids, moved off, and his parents moved. And then the block was all African American.
So now that you're like of age to understand this, and now you have kids of your own, you think that they will have to do the same thing you did when you were younger to be black?
I think they will have some of the roadblocks that are you know are there. That I'm hoping for them that it'll be easier to navigate. That some of these roadblocks would have been removed by the time they get to be adults and enter into the world of employment. That they won't have to. It won't be as harsh as it was for my generation coming up, that their generation will be a lot more socially justice. The institutional racism would have been somewhat removed, and justice and equality would be more equitable to them and to you.
Yeah. How was it like in school?
School for when I was coming up, school was more, students were engaged. I mean, we had to deal with some difficulties. You know, but there were more black teachers when I was going through the school than there are now. So it was a little different. You know, I mean, students were more engaged. I think more engaged about learning, depending on what school you went to. The environment for learning was more collaborative with students in the classroom. There was not that much disruption. For what I hear now, that we're more, you were in the classroom, you studied. If you didn't want to, you didn't do it, but you didn't disrupt the class. You just didn't do your work.
Was your classroom diverse?
No, for the most part, when I was in school, in my neighborhood, and the neighborhood was mostly African-American by that time. Okay. So everybody, all the white folks had moved out by then, you know, by the 60s, the 70s, you know, they were all gone. Then the schools were predominantly black. Only those who couldn't get out were there.
Right.
White people who couldn't afford to move, they were the only ones who had to stay in that state.
Any black owned companies near you at the time?
There were some black owned store owners coming up that I remember, you know. The Delicatessen on Chew Avenue, the Chew in Washington Lane, Miss Joyce, she owned that. And she did well for herself. Then it was Mr. Anderson at Chew and Tullahockin. He had a little variety store there, sold candy and things. Up the street at Chew in Duval, there was a gentleman who owned the store. And then the barbershops all were mostly in our neighborhood owned by black people.
Yeah,
they were all owned by black people because it was only black people in the neighborhood, and that's where we went to get our hair cut.
What was the problem at the time? Like, you know, everybody was going through segregation still, maybe?
Segregation, it was in process, and during the 60s, by that time I was born in 58, so the '60s. I grew up through the '60s, doing the marches and everything, and the fight for equality, voting, all those things during that time. So, yeah, segregation was the fight. Yeah, they fought for segregation to be able to integrate more so into the white community or white social development for the most part. He fought for that, and I think with that, fighting for that was where the fact that most of everything else just for us deteriorated. I think we did well along this with segregation, in my opinion, you know. Mm-hmm. Things flourished as far as stuff for black people. So we had to deal with just us, and dealing with us, just us, and we had to have certain amenities that for survival.
Right. Well, okay. Thank you for your time. I'll be able to answer questions I have.